crazy? I mean, it's the workplace has not kept pace for innovation to really flourish, and for that trust and those relationships to strengthen, you need to have more people there across teams, not just within a team. Think beyond the walls of your office. Think about the vibrancy of your neighborhood and how can you take advantage of that.
Welcome to Future Work, the podcast about a happier future of work and the role of people and technology within that. And in today's episode, we talk with Janet Polk, the Global Director of Workplace Research at Gensler, about office design in 2024. Janet shares her insights from over 20 years of research, including their latest study, which covered 15 countries and 16,000 office workers. We'll discuss how the pandemic has accelerated changes in workplace expectations, the essential elements of high-performing workspaces, and practical tips for making your office a place where people truly want to be. So let's dive in. Hybrid work is here to stay, but are you making the most of it? Join us on July 8th for the Hybrid Work Dilemma. Learn how to do more with less office space while increasing productivity, collaboration, and employee engagement. Hear from Agathe's Corinne Murray, Stanford University's Nick Bloom, the world's leading hybrid work expert, Janet Polk McLaurin, the Global Director of Workplace Research at Gensler, one of the most prominent workplace design firms, and Tiffany Ouyang Lam, the US Workplace Manager for Grammarly. And this is not just another webinar. It's a chance to get inspired and connect with peers in a live roundtable to tackle your hybrid work challenges. Thanks to Tectic, the number one rated space logistics platform used by customers like Microsoft, Red Bull, and the UN for making this event possible. Sign up now at flexos.org/hybrid2024. flexos.org/hybrid2024. Don't miss out. Okay, Janet, so thanks so much for being on. It's really an honor to have you here today.
My pleasure.
So great to talk to you. I've been following you for quite a while now, and you work for Gensler. Maybe can you explain to the audience a little bit about your role there? Like, what do you focus on?
Sure. Well, I'm the Global Director of Workplace Research. We've been doing this research for 20 years, and we just completed our latest research, which was 15 countries, 16,000 office workers across 10 different industries. And I should back up that Gensler is a global design firm. Our mission is really to make a positive impact on people that use the spaces we design, whether it's workplace or up to city level.
Amazing. So you are definitely the person to talk to when it comes to the office. And obviously, I don't know, my experience doesn't go back that far, but could we say that the last couple of years have been some of the most transformational ones in the way that we use offices?
You can clearly say that.
Okay,
that's
okay, good.
Statement. I think we're going through a major transformation in not only how we work, but our expectations for where we work as well.
Yeah. But at the same time, I saw in that latest report you mentioned that most offices actually haven't been changed, haven't been adapted after the pandemic and after people started working from home more.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I mean, it's the workplace has not kept pace with all the other change in work life.
Yeah. So what are some things that you found in terms of, you know, where offices should be versus where they truly are?
At first, people were coming back to the office because it was a social place and they wanted to reconnect. And it was all that pent up kind of demand on what we were missing during the pandemic. But now we see that the key reason people want to come into the office is really to focus on their work, getting their work done. And that entails working with others, but also working alone. And so how do we think about creating a high-performing workplace that people can actually get their work done?
This is obviously a big point of contention because somehow, even after a couple of years now, we are still in the raging debate about working from home versus working in the office. Do people come to the office to work, as you said, and they want to focus? And I understand that because I also don't really have the space at home to do all my work and to do that with the best facilities. But then there's also the issue of the commute. So I have to somehow get to that office. And somehow, for a lot of people, it doesn't really feel there's a good balance between the investment of commuting to an office and then arriving at that office and not getting the facilities that you need. So is that indeed something that the office needs to resolve? Like, does the physical office need to change for that value equation to be better?
Well, you know, we've been looking at this for a long time. And we did a deep dive in six U.S. cities right before the holidays, right at the end of 2023. And we found that there's life issues, you know, like being parents of young children, that commute. There's also work issues like distributed work. For example, you and I both work in different time zones than what we currently are residing. So there's calls that happen early morning. There's calls that happen late at night. Oftentimes that is at home. And there's workplace issues too. But overall, we're seeing that people are spending about half of their typical work week at the office. And they're spending about 20% at home. And the surprise is about a third of that week, all that balance is in an array of other places. Business travel is being at your client's office. It's traveling to other offices within your company. Yeah. It's co-working and it's third places, you know, the coffee shops, other spaces that might be in your neighborhood near your office, or it could be your neighborhood near your home.
And so that means that with that small fraction actually of time that people are spending in offices, the occupancy is lower than maybe what it was before the pandemic. And is that part of why now companies are looking into redesigning their offices? But at the same time, you said like most companies are not. So
I don't think it's an occupancy issue for many companies. It's like, how do we get our people back together? It's all about how do we create high performing workplaces for the people that are there? Because it's not that we're coming in certain days and staying home other days. That does occur in some hybrid work, but it's that we're in and out the office all day long and all week long. And so we're no longer, the best companies are no longer talking about days of the week. They're talking about a percentage of a typical work week, knowing that there's going to be some times that you're in the office for days on end during a certain project. And then you may be working in other locations during other phases of that project. And all of those kind of dynamics are still occurring. It's really about, you know, how do we create better spaces when people are at the office, which in turn may bring more people back? And how do we create spaces, not for the few that are there, but how do we create events and a vibrancy to the office so that more people are there at any one time? It's not about leveling out and having different teams come in different days, because for innovation to really flourish and for that trust and those relationships to strengthen, you need to have more people there across teams, not just within a team.
That's a big conundrum though for most companies, right? To get everyone together, it sounds nice. It's pretty hard to do. And again, like there are many people also who would say that, you know, there are great examples now of companies that are fully remote or mostly distributed, like Atlassian or Dropbox or even Nvidia, which is now the most valuable company in the world. So for those offices to adapt and for them to become more attractive, to make them great places for people to be. And to your point, and I think the report talks a lot about productivity hubs, right? Make them places where people can actually do work. What are some of the changes that you would recommend based on the research you've done to adapt offices to become more like those productivity hubs?
Well, there's two things you really need to think about. One is, how can you make the workplace effective to get work done? And then the other is, how do you make a great experience where people really want to be? So think of these factors like as two halves of a circle. One is about function and purpose. The other is about evoking an emotional connection. And think about it as one is the heart, the other is the head. That's, you need both of those in order to create a high performing workspace. So we feel that those that are working in high performing workspaces actually have stronger, they're more engaged in employees, they have stronger team relationships, and they have a stronger culture of innovation. And so as we're thinking about how do you create those spaces, you know, what are those elements that are really important? I think it's really around how do you design for some critical work activities. It's about focused concentration, which needs private spaces, you know, heads down. Yeah. When you come in to the office to work with others, there is the co-creation kind of spaces, those innovation hubs, right?
Yeah.
But there's also spaces for informal conversations, you know, that you're more impromptu. There's spaces for confidential conversations around coaching and mentoring and growing that next generation of leaders. But then there's also spaces that you need to have that are more for hybrid meetings. You know, have video conferencing capability and the right technology in order to co-create when not everybody's in the room. And then finally, there's these spaces that are really around well-being, that are around relaxing, recharging, taking a break. And those spaces are not amenities that are optional. They're really an important piece of how we perform at our best.
So it sounds like you have a couple of categories of spaces, right? That every office now should have. So it's focus, well-being.
It's working with others in person, and it's working with others virtually.
Right. And that's where you have that technology piece of it cannot just be a great room to meet in person. The person who is joining remotely, which again happened already a lot before the pandemic, but obviously now we're more accustomed to, they need to be an equal participant in that conversation. So the technology part is also very important.
It's crucial. It's absolutely crucial. It's not only the space of how it's designed, but it's that technology piece of it so that it's seamless.
Yeah, very difficult to feel part of a meeting when, you know, everyone is like 10 people in one box and then you in one box. And, you know, that doesn't really feel quite as equal.
Or worse, that you've got one box that has 15 people sitting, you know, in a room and you feel like you're an observer and not a participant and an equal participant.
Yeah, and that really takes away from your ability to connect with people and to feel that you're all part of it. So one of the very small tweaks that we've done, we're a very small team, but every team meeting that we have, everyone has to open it on their own computer. We don't have money for big technology, but we do small things like that to make sure that the people who join remotely do get to see everyone face-to-face in an equal fashion, which I think is very small, but it works really well. I'm very curious, like, what other elements of that technology should people now think of implementing? Well, because video is one, audio is probably another one, right? If you cannot hear people properly, or you only hear the person sitting closest to the microphone, very different experience, very difficult to work together.
That's right. And the acoustics in the room have a lot of bearing to it as well. You know, how do you think about, we've been doing a lot of labs and experimentation in our own offices, in our San Francisco office. We actually have mocked up a number of hybrid meeting spaces that are out in the open. They're not even an enclosed room. So there's ways that you can use directional speakers, you know, cameras that follow and zoom in, and you can actually have hybrid meetings occurring beside each other, and there's no conflict of noise and, you know, where the camera is following and the like. I think the technology is only going to get better. So it's up to us to think about how are all these various ways that we work together and co-create together or have status meetings or one-on-ones, they all take different types of spaces. You know, in the past, we thought about it as you need a conference room at these different sizes. Now we're thinking about it very differently. I happen to be sitting in a room right now in our office that has a little sofa and it has a little chair sitting to the side that's more soft seating. It does have a table in here, but, you know, we have different ways of outfitting rooms and different types of furniture, and some are more with your standard whiteboards or flip charts, and others are very digital, and you need different types of rooms for different types of meetings.
So a lot of diversity is needed in the types of spaces. And obviously you guys are designing and building for other people. So you have to have your office be a little bit of a showcase of what should be.
But you do.
But then we do get to the question, Is this achievable for most companies? Because obviously when you work with like really big clients like you guys do, then of course there's going to be big budget. I'm sure they will still feel like they don't have enough, but there's going to be a budget to do these like really big office renovations and to build a really beautiful big office. Can you apply some of these principles without having that kind of budget?
You absolutely can. So think about, how do you create zones even within your existing space? You know, if people need privacy and they need quiet zone or quiet spaces in order to do deep concentration, then take part of the office and say, this is a quiet car. You know, on the east, I live on the East Coast and there's Amtrak and there's one car on the Amtrak train that's a quiet car and nobody can talk. And so libraries are doing this resurgence in workplaces, which is putting some books, because everybody knows the rules of a library. Okay, this zone, no talking. This is, if you're working here, it's heads down, don't interrupt. And so we have that in our own office, but we created, you know, think about also how can you extend the office beyond the boundaries of your lease space. So think about what's in the building, what's outside, go for walking meetings. How do you take advantage of the coffee shop down the street or even civic spaces like our actual library that may be down the block? And so we're seeing that workplaces are now an ecosystem of spaces, both in and out of the office. And that's one of the reasons why we see these third places really surging. And think about that as an extension of your workspace and office.
I love this. This is so practical. First of all, I love that idea of just the contextual clue of seeing library style books around you and immediately you quiet down, because we all know how hard it is to manage workplaces, even if you design them very well. And then the other part of thinking about the extension beyond just the office and where can you encourage people? I'm just thinking about it like you're a new employee, you're going into a company, you walk into that office for the first time and someone could introduce you to, oh, and there's a library around the corner where you can work too. And we all really like this coffee shop, and then also make use of that space. You have more practical tips like that? I love this.
That's right. Be very select with interventions. Be an anthropologist and step back and kind of observe. Where are people working well? What are they working around? Are there architectural barriers to, you know, fostering certain behaviors? And then what could we do as clues? You know, sometimes just lowering the lighting level will also bring the acoustic level down, you know. Putting, not unlike if well-being is an important part of what you're trying to signal to your employees, then put out hydration stations and water and fresh fruit. You know, things like that do signal different behaviors and different attitudes. And I think that's particularly important with the younger generation. You know, they're craving not only this variety of spaces, but a variety of experiences. You know, it includes work cafes and outdoor spaces and balance with those libraries for deep focus. And just having these different experiences as you move around the office will actually encourage the people get up and move and start to match what they're doing in terms of a work activity with the spaces.
Yeah. Are there a lot of differences between generations? Are there a lot of difference between like what someone at a certain age would look for in an office and what someone, you know, let's say younger would look for?
We did not see a huge difference in generations until after the pandemic. And then suddenly we did see some big differences.
Really?
So Generation Z, I mean, think about different stages of life and different stages of your career as well. Gen Z actually spends a little bit more time at the office than, say, boomers do.
More time. Wow.
But what's really fascinating is if they're spending about 56% of a typical work week, they say they ideally need the office 62% or two-thirds of the week, and in order to maximize their individual and team productivity. So there is this drawback to the office. And think about, you know, if you're a young generation, it was a long while ago that I was at kind of an early stage of my own career, but that's where you're a sponge and you're absorbing it all. You know, you benefit from overhearing conversations, from observing how senior leaders are handling certain situations or make certain decisions. You're actually learning a lot from your peers. And so workplace design really needs to have this variety of spaces that are private, but they're visible. You know, they're where you can start to see people, ask questions, start to observe, and then that senior leaders can also be accessible for those questions. And so trying to create these places that people can move around, feel a part of the community, but also learn, and having spaces where you can just pull off and have a discussion, like before and after a meeting, as you're ramping up, oh, be sure and do this, give that debrief after the meeting. Oh, you did a great job with that. Next time I do this. And that kind of tweaks is very hard to do when it's all virtual. That's one of the key reasons why we see the younger generations really craving coming back to the office, so that they're a part of something and they're learning. And that is exactly how our corporate norms, you know, the culture of an organization is passed on. It's really observing, walking the talk, right?
Yeah. And it sounds a lot more carrot than stick, because I think in a lot of the debate about return to office, it was a lot about the policy and the mandates. And you're talking much more about, like, how do you create attractive workplaces for people to come, because it serves the function that they need. But also, it sounds that it's half the physical environment, which obviously you have to focus on. But it also sounds a bit about the company culture and the norms and how people work. Because again, if those senior leaders don't show up in the office, then there's still nothing for those youngsters to soak up.
That's right.
What's that component? Like, when you're advising on office design, do you sometimes also have to sit down companies and say, yeah, but you got to act a bit differently too. You cannot just let, it's not cosmetical.
You do. Like, you can lead a horse to water. We could build the space, but you have to activate it, and you have to put into practice kind of the behaviors that you're trying to elicit. And we see some new best practices emerging. I think it's less around policy, because no one wants to be told what to do. It's more around, how can you activate the space differently? We're seeing core days, you know, start to reappear. That's when everybody tries to be in the office. It's about connecting different teams and ideas. We see scheduled learning events or social events where there's this additional incentive or purpose to come into the office. We see teams reserving face-to-face time. I know our own team does this, because there's nothing worse than coming into the office and you really want to sit with your team and realize that there's no time I'm available, because everybody's on scheduled meetings. So we said, look, let's table some of these standing meetings on the day that we're all in together and just schedule time with each other. Like, if that standing meeting has to occur, make sure it's within our team. And let's just do this face to face. There's another one that's kind of surfacing I'm hearing more about, and that's no Zoom Fridays, you know, or having days that is really set aside for individual focus time, so that we're not feeling like we're always on or always meeting. Meetings can be very taxing. And I think it just came out in the news, I think it was a Wall Street Journal article talking about loneliness has never been higher. Yeah. And a lot of it is due to these kind of meetings that just occurred on one right after the other, and taking time to really be with one another. We're social individuals. Yeah. And that goes a long way toward feeding our souls and building a community and building trust. And building trust with one another is, in these social relationships, is what trust and innovation is, the outcome of that currency of trust that we're building. I think it's really important to take time and just be together. And so be very intentional about it. And then we're seeing that designing the space to really underscore and reinforce that intention, even though that intention and purpose may be different company to company, that's where the uniqueness of the design can also play a role in that, because the space is really the nudge to those behaviors.
That's the nudge to the behavior that you're trying to evoke. But it sounds like people have to be a lot more thoughtful and a lot more intentional about when and where to get together. And it also means that this is not just something that you can just do at the top of the company and, again, push it down as a mandate or as, like you said, the core day. There has to be a lot also from the middle manager and individual team leaders to now take on that role of becoming a community leader and making it exciting for people to come together and organizing things around, you know, maybe there's a serious meeting, but then we also go out for lunch. Do companies now actually do this? Or is this still something that's a bit hypothetical and we have a couple of case studies? Like how practice is this
we're,
now?
We're working with a number of leaders at the top of their various industries doing just that. In some cases, we're working with companies to help design programs that aren't space oriented, but just about connecting people. You know, there's one thing of creating this physical work environment. The other part is how do you prepare people for the new space and new ways of working. And you need both. And you need the technology and the policy to come back and reinforce that. But when you think about it as a system and it's all aligned, that's when the magic can really start to happen. And if you include the voice of everyone in the organization, at least they feel like they had a say in what it is that of the design of the space, we have found that those are just wildly successful. We've had a number of projects that, you know, it's 20% occupancy before we started designing. And after move-in, it's 80% occupancy just because the space started to spur the behaviors and relationships that and engagement that they were trying to get.
And you said it's in that process, it's very important to get the input of the people working in that office.
That's
it sounds
right.
Like a great best practice, which probably companies overstep quite a few times. Maybe not with an engagement with a firm like yours, where there's so much on the line, there's such a big investment that, you know, of course you want to get it right. How do you effectively get the voice of the employee into that design process?
Well, you can do it a number of ways. You know, we've done it with interactive surveys, for example. Tell us how you work. What's important? What do you value? We do it with focus groups. You know, so we do a cross section of different people, and whoever participates in that has an obligation to go back and share that. You know, pull ideas back with their team, and we've got different team representatives. You also can do a segment of just new employees or just those that have been here a long while, or cross section of various teams that may work very differently from one another, and then bring back the design as it's getting developed, sharing, seeking feedback, saying this is an open process and we really want everyone involved. Because when people feel like they had a say, they now have ownership and
yes,
they're behind it even more. And they know that their company cared about them as a person.
Yeah, it's actually a great opportunity to build and strengthen the relationship, you know, from the company to the employee and make everyone feel that they're part of something. I think I would much rather stick around in an office that I helped co-design than, you know, some generic office that I didn't have any input on. So hopefully
that
should really help in the engagement and in retention of key people. And again, making people much more valued, right, if they're part of the process. And it should be exciting, right? It should be something fun to think about, okay, we're going
to
redo this anyway. Yeah, like what can we make of it, right?
That's right.
It sounds fantastic, yeah.
Well, co-creating with our clients is definitely a fun process.
Yeah, is it? Yeah.
It is.
So this has all been very fascinating, Janet, because obviously I'm very passionate about beautiful offices that I have worked in, but I've also seen the other side of offices that you have to drag yourself to and you really don't want to be there, where again, that home office suddenly becomes very alluring, especially if the commute isn't that great. I love some of the very practical notes that you gave in terms of the kind of spaces that you want to introduce, the process to get there, but also extending it beyond your own office and looking at spaces around you and the connectivity between all of that. I think that the importance of technology too. What are some like very practical tips if people just take away 2-3 tips if they're thinking about redoing their office, or maybe they want to convince their boss that they should redo their office? What are some like very practical things you would advise people to do?
Well, I'd advise you to step back and kind of look at how do you work? How can we make that better? But then how do we engage the emotions? You mentioned beauty. Beauty is very important. You know, having a space that you feel good about and good in, how can it feel inclusive? How can it feel welcoming to absolutely everybody, not only the people that work there, but maybe your clients that also visit? And how can it be a place that people feel inspired to do their best work? And engaging at that level, not just the functional, but also with the heart is really important. And then think beyond the walls of your office. Think about the vibrancy of your neighborhood and how can you take advantage of that? And how could maybe you contribute to it? You know, we're all part of a community and workplaces and cities go hand in hand. And, you know, we have an obligation to bring the vibrancy back to our cities in which we live as well. And so how can you be a good corporate citizen, as well as taking advantage of the neighborhood as part of your workspace.
I love that. I think that's so great. And maybe to conclude, one wish you have for the future of work.
Only one.
I want to start.
You know, I think it's such an exciting time for the future of work and the future of workplace design, because AI is going to fundamentally change how we work, which means that the physical work environments are also going to change and how we come together as well. My wish is that we reimagine work in the fullest sense. You know, it's an opportunity to rethink being together and how do we create workplaces that are compelling destinations, you know, and that people really want to be part of that community, again, where everybody feels included and welcome, and to design buildings that can not only respond, but start to anticipate our wants and our needs. And we leave at the end of the day that we're actually healthier and happier than when we arrived that morning, and that our cities and the neighborhoods are even more vibrant. That's a big wish, but that's my wish.
It's a beautiful wish. I think you've combined a few wishes there, but I'll take it. And I cannot wait to spend some time in one of the offices that you and your team have designed, because that's the place that I would definitely love to go to. Thanks
so
much.
You are welcome anytime.
Okay. Thanks so much for being on. And I'll also link to the new research report in the show notes so that everyone can dive deeper into the data and get some of those practical recommendations of what to do. Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today as we explored the future of office design with Jenna Polk from Gensler. Here are a few takeaways from the conversation. Number one, high-performing workspaces. Many offices remain unchanged post-pandemic despite significant shifts in how we work. As Janet says, people now spend about half of their work week in the office, and more than ever, they come into that office to focus and get their work done. So, evaluate and update your office to align with new work habits and expectations. With more spaces for focused work, co-creation, informal and confidential conversations, hybrid meetings, and well-being. And make sure you involve employees in the design process to increase their engagement and satisfaction with the workspace. As Janet said, when people feel like they had a say, they have ownership. Number two, balancing function and experience. Successful workspaces balance functional efficiency with creating an engaging, welcoming environment. It is not the space alone. We need to be intentional about the experience by hosting events, having team and core days, and doing that to create a sense of vibrancy so that offices are a carrot and not a stick. For innovation, the lifeblood of companies, to flourish, you need to have more people across teams and not just within one team. So beyond the office design, think about why people want to be there and how you facilitate this. And number three, leveraging third places. I love Gensler's finding that you can extend the functionality and the appeal of your office by using third spaces like coffee shops. With employees already spending about a third of their week outside of the office, help them find more opportunities to tap into co-working spaces, libraries, coffee shops, and outdoor spaces to complement the office setting. And the final one, improving technology. Effective technology integration is essential for successful hybrid work environments. As Janet said, almost every meeting will have someone joining remotely. Invest in technology that enhances communication and collaboration, ensuring remote and in-office workers are equally engaged. This is not just microphones and cameras, but also optimizing the room's acoustics. Join me again next week when I interview Annie Dean, the global head of Team Anywhere at Atlassian, for the finale of Future Work Season 3. And if you like this episode, Please subscribe and give this podcast 5 stars on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. This helps a lot to boost our mission of a happier future of work. To be the first one to get updates on new episodes, subscribe at flexos.org/futurework.